So the topic and the title of the retreat, Inner Peace. But actually, what is peace? First of all, how do you define peace? I was teaching meditation for about 10 years and somebody asked me, what is peace? Because most people can only define it as to what it's not. It's not war, it's not tension, it's not, you know, conflict, it's not this and not that. But what is it? What is peace? Lightness, that's very nice. Acceptance, that brings peace. That brings peace. Surrender. Love. Actually, I was fortunate because I was in the Philippines and the person who was translating, because I couldn't answer it actually, just in a, what is it? And I asked the person who was translating, what's the word you are using in Visayan language? And she said, clear mind. And I've never found a better definition for peace. Think about it. Clear mind, which means that I don't react to anything. My mind is clear. I can observe. And then I can choose how I respond, not react. So when the mind is not clear, there is always reaction, correct? Either in our tone or in our way of doing something. So peace is to have a clear mind. And I was teaching a group of 24 business people. I said, do you all want peace? They said, yes. I said, but you also want to get rich, correct? They said, definitely. So I asked them, can you get rich as well as by being peaceful? Can you be peaceful and still get rich? What do you think?
Difficult.
Yeah. What do you think? They all said, it was in another Asian country, Korea, they all said, no, you can't be peaceful and get rich. And even if you see all the advertising for in business, it's young, aggressive, right? This is the kind of language that's used. They don't advertise peaceful, clear-minded person to run my company. I've never seen that. So it really is important to understand what is peace, because then I ask those business people, well, you want to be peaceful and you want to get rich and you can't do them both. What are you going to do? What do you think they said?
Rich.
First we'll get rich, then we'll be peaceful. And I said, good luck, because often you don't make it, you know, because all kinds of things happen if you are not peaceful, right? Peace is so important for our health, our relationships, our state of mind. So I said, good luck trying to get rich without being peaceful, because things fall apart, right? Just think of relationships. And when something goes wrong in the business and we react, we make poor decisions. So actually peace is very powerful. So when we have this topic, inner peace, inner power, it really means a lot. Because when we are peaceful, we are so powerful. And in fact, even in school, I was quite a troublesome girl and I used to like to talk in class, and there was only one teacher I didn't misbehave with. Maybe she was a meditator, I don't know, because I didn't even know what meditation was, but she kept this presence that I dare not do anything. And I think she was a meditator. She just held this space and I didn't mess around with her at all. Right? Do you know those people? You just don't mess with them. And when you learn martial arts, you also learn this. If you're good, you never have to fight. you hold the mentality, don't mess with me. You don't have to fight if you're good in martial arts. It's your second class, second number, if you ever have to fight. So this is what we're talking about, this inner peace, inner power, and living it practically. So when we're talking about the experience of peace, it's so wonderful that you are here. Because what happens when we experience peace, we create a taste for it. And you know what it is, and you know when you don't have it, and you feel very uncomfortable. So you'll do anything to get back to that peace, right? Have you had that experience of peace that you know you don't want to live without it because it's not comfortable, it's not me. You know, I've lost myself when I've lost my peace. So when I've had that taste of peace, it's also so important because I'll always look for it. And the deeper I can go into the experience, the deeper the taste. It's like, you know, we get a bit spoiled, don't we, when we have something wonderful, like, I don't like to say, like a good coffee. Once you've had a good coffee, it's a bit of a problem because no other coffee tastes as good, right? And so it's kind of a little bit, you know, you're very fussy then. But peace is like that too. Once you've had an experience of peace, a deep peace, you want that quality again. And you seek it. You seek it. It's almost like a positive addiction because you can't live without it and you want more. So that's what it's also about, creating these positive addictions so we can free ourselves of all the others because we were using different things to self-medicate, you know, whatever we were doing, smoking, drinking, whatever. We do it to self-medicate. But once we know that there's something else that we can experience, that we can taste, that will bring us into that state that we're looking for, then we don't need all the temporary things. And that's, Judy used this word intention. And they say there's a difference between the word desire and intention. Because intention is really will. Whereas desire, you know, they even say a pure mind creates desires that bring happiness. You know, so once we learn to purify our thoughts, to create a higher level of thinking, then our thoughts, our wishes will be to bring happiness to ourselves and others. Because there's nothing wrong with desires, actually. It's just when they're the short-term, temporary things that ultimately lead to sorrow. That's when they're a problem. So intention is a good word for this. It's like if you want to climb Mount Everest, you have to let go of 1,000 small desires because of that one intention, right? You have this intention, this will. And so you have to let go of, you know, you can't eat properly for months. You can't sleep comfortably. You have to tolerate, you know, the weather. You risk your life. You're away from your family. You give up so much. You have to earn, apparently. You have to save about $1 million also to climb Mount Everest. It's not cheap. You have to have people to carry your oxygen and all of that. But, you know, you just have this intention and then all the small things just seem like nothing. You can just let go of them. So I think your arriving here is one of those. You had the intention. I love this exercise, all the supports we have to support our intention. But when we have this intention and you had that to reach here, then all the things you had to do, the money you had to save, the organization to look after everything while you're away, you know, sometimes you have health issues, all the things that we need to do. So we've reached here. And where are we? It's Mount Abu, famous. Actually, it's a famous place for yogis and hermits. If you go amongst the mountains, I don't suggest it, not in this weather, you'll find people living in caves still, right? You'll still find people living in caves up there. Sometimes they have programs here and they come out of the caves and come down. But it's still famous. It's the Aravalli mountain range. And it's very, I'm sure you experienced it as you're climbing up. And we're in this ancient land where people have been living in solitude with this intention to experience. And I think that's why you're here. We don't want to just have, you didn't come here for a good time. There's many places you can go to have a good time. You've come here with an intention, right, to experience something. And I'm sure it started already, even with your evening, your morning meditation, your walk. It's already happening. So the main thing is to be aware and conscious as much as you can so that you can take as much benefit. And although we don't want to say don't do this and don't do that, and, you know, I know it is also very wonderful taking photos, but just be careful not to be too much into thinking, talking, you know, taking photos. I mean, everything in its moderation, because, you know, we're still here in a magical place, but just to make sure it's not taking me out of what I've come here for. Because again, you can go many beautiful places and take photos, but there's much more here to experience. And so when we're on this journey, there's also another tip I want to share with you. Often when we start on a spiritual path, or many of you, I'm sure, have been on a spiritual path for many years, we often think that the more we do something, the more extreme we are, the more intense we are, the more perfection we will reach. But it's not like that. I want to share with you. I think one big insight for me was when I heard that perfection is not up there, it's here. It's in balance. And that was a big paradigm shift for me, because I wanted so much to be a beautiful being, a great person. So I was doing so much effort for that, and I wanted to be, you know, a great yogi, powerful. But then sometimes I just exhaust myself getting up 2 o'clock in the morning to meditate, or different things to make myself powerful. But once I realized it's in this balance, then I found I could live this life in a much easier way, because balance is lightness. You know, you have to be very light if you're walking a tightrope, right? You have to be very light so that you can balance. And we are balancing many things here. We're balancing, you know, being connected to the body. This body is so precious. It's so valuable. But not to be attached to it, because I'm much more than the body. So I am the soul living in this body, using this body. I need to look after it so that it can express, I can express myself through this body. But to have that awareness that it's my instrument. And so having that balance between the soul and the body, having the balance between, you know, keeping a state of being introvert, you know, introversion. Sometimes people don't think that's a positive thing. It's seen quite negatively. But the Hindi word is to turn your face within. So it's to see yourself. And what I would say is the main benefit of that is that we stop blaming. Because I think, again, another big, big step in my journey was, I think, when I stopped blaming. Because as long as we're blaming, we can't learn anything. We don't change. So that's another big one. So learning that introversion so I can see myself and not blame. Just see what I can do, what I'm meant to learn, how I can progress. It's not that the other person's not maybe doing something wrong and I'm being affected, but that's because I'm meant to learn something in this moment so I can take that lesson. And then we have this beautiful balance that we talk about in Raj Yoga of being loving and unattached. Actually, they say detach, but that's a very cold word. So the word is pyara, love, and nyara, which means to stand apart from, to be unique, not to be enmeshed. You know, not get enmeshed with anyone else. Because I have to know where I end and you begin, you know, not mix up with others. And so this whole learning of being loving and, okay, let's say the word detach, because it's the way we've interpreted it that we're seeing it quite negatively. But it's a really good quality. Like if you're a nurse, you have to be detached. You can't get involved with all your patients and suffer with them. You have to be loving, but also stand apart from so that you can serve. And in our relationships with others, you know, I'm not here to control others. And that's what they say, that attachment is controlling. Detachment is allowing. So even in love, detachment is closer to love than attachment, right? But most people think we need to be attached. That's a sign of love. Is it? Because if you're doing that, you will be controlling. Especially with children. Not partners also? Definitely also. We try so hard, it doesn't work. So, and also a very interesting balance that I heard, and that was being intoxicated, because I quite like to be intoxicated, and I believe that it's a very, very good state of mind. Nowadays they talk about gamma waves, and it's that aha, that intoxicated state. It's a great state to be in. But intoxicated and yet humble. Sometimes when we're so intoxicated, we get a bit overpowering, right? Do you know what I mean? Like my father used to wake up so bright and cheerful. Good morning, good morning. I used to pretend I'm asleep until he went to work. Because he was too bright in the morning. So when we're intoxicated, we can be a bit overpowering for other people. So all these beautiful balances. So when we're, you know, having this time to reflect, it's very lovely to see where I can tweak things to make myself more, you know, rounded. And so there's another thing I wanted to share, that the word meditation in Sanskrit means to cultivate the soul. It's a beautiful meaning of meditation, cultivate the soul. So what it means is I need to see what, you know, like a garden, what does the garden need? Sometimes it needs water, sometimes it needs some kind of mineral. You know, we have a a wonderful big garden at our place. I know how many different things it needs. So sometimes it needs worms, you know. So we need many things. And I don't mean physical worms, but we need space, so that's what the worms do. They create space so I can not be so compacted. So I need to cultivate my mind so that it can grow very beautiful things. And I really liked what someone was sharing yesterday, that the world is really going in a very downward spiral, and there's a lot of emphasis on division and separateness. And yet here, the whole focus is on creating what's beautiful, even physically. You see how many plants and, you know, this place was just a big dust bowl. You know, when we came here, I think 25 years ago, it was a dust bowl. And it's become a very beautiful garden with lots of fruit trees. And so that's what we need to do inside here. So during this week, there's so much time for you to cultivate this inner world so that you can literally enjoy yourself. Do you enjoy yourself? How wonderful I am. What a beautiful being. That's what we need to be able to feel. Because when we feel full, naturally, without any effort, we will be giving. We don't have to make any effort to give when we feel full. It just comes out. And so by looking after myself, I serve the world. That's how I serve the world best, by looking after and nurturing myself, because it'll be a natural outcome and opportunities will come for you to be of service here or there. It comes just because you're ready. And this is, I think, also probably what many of you feel, that there's so many problems in the world. What can I do to make a difference? And so when we cultivate this inner world of ours, it's so amazing. I mean, I was talking to our brother earlier, and he's saying he loves adventure. And this world is a very amazing place to explore. But this inner world is equally as amazing. And as, you know, Judy said, I've been on this path for nearly 50 years, and it just gets more and more interesting. It doesn't get boring. It's always more fascinating and subtle. And maybe that's another word I'd like to highlight, just to keep that word subtle in your mind. I don't know if you're getting a good translation for that word, but that word subtle, because there's a lot that we can glean, we can take when we are subtle. And we say in Raja Yoga that we need to be able to see what we can't see, right? Like we see each other as souls, but I can't see a soul. We see the love and the intention and the peace in each one. They're not physical things to see, because this is not an objective study. We're not studying material things. We're studying ourselves, and I'm a subject. I'm not an object. So all of this study is subjective. So what that means, it's experimental. I'm the subject of this study. You are too, a little bit, my subjects. I do study people a lot too, because we can learn a lot from other people and from other people. So, yeah, we're studying subjects, because it's all a living presence that is our material that we study here. And this is why when I said yesterday about, you know, our seniors, and I didn't speak much about the founder, Brahma Baba, but, you know, we are not, as you can see, we don't have anything of worship here. We don't do any worship. We don't idolize anyone or anything. But we can learn. We can be inspired, you know, which means to bring life, to bring breath into ourselves by being inspired by others. So we can learn. And just to mention, because the picture's not here, but you may see the picture of our founder. I'm sure you've seen it in some of the centers you've been to. At the back there, that little incognito one there. It's at the back. But the founder, Brahma Baba. So, you know, he started this movement 90 years ago, but very much with the intention to put women in front. And so even we've always been told not to remember any human form. And in fact, for me, I didn't have a very close relationship with Brahma Baba, we call Brahma Baba, for many, many years, maybe 30 years, because I didn't want Brahma Baba to get in between my relationship with the Supreme. I don't want anyone in the middle. I want to have a direct connection, a direct experience. I want to have a very personal experience, not through someone else telling me what God thinks, what God says, but what can I experience? Maybe I had an aversion to gurus or something like that, but it took me many years. And it doesn't matter, and that's what I want to also say. While you're here, this is a very, very personal journey, incredibly personal. And that's what makes it so interesting. If you talk to each one, the experience that each one takes away will be so unique and different because it's our personal experience. And don't feel you have to accept anything, believe anything. It's really for you to explore, to be open. You know, I've just moved into a place in Melbourne and there was a lady there, 91 years old, and she asked me to talk to her about Raja Yoga, to explain what it was. And I explained to her, you know, with her, I spoke with her for probably nearly an hour, and I had such an amazing experience because I think she was the most open-minded person I had ever spoken to. I had never noticed that everyone has got these, you know, like barriers. We're all careful not to go there or here. But she just sat like this. At 91, she listened. And I thought, ah, oh, I love this. She's intelligent enough to make her own choices what she thinks of what I'm saying. But she's listening with a completely open mind. So it's also something to learn to have that open mind because, as I said, I don't think I'd met anyone in my life up until a few years ago that I would say was open-minded. So if we can be open-minded and then see what resonates with us, see what sits with us. And also there's another aspect of this practice, and that is the four subjects. Have you heard about the four subjects of Raja Yoga? Knowledge, yoga, inculcation of virtue, dharana, dharna, but inculcation, and service. So that also is a very good way to know myself and to be easy with myself. Because some people are more inclined towards one subject or another. Someone may be more inclined towards knowledge, others towards service. or towards yoga. And wherever you feel it's easiest, it's good to start there because the others will develop. Like for me, to be honest, it was service. I just loved the service that the Brahma Kumaris were doing because I saw that, you know, people were suffering so much and there didn't seem to be any solutions. And so for me, it was the service. But because I wanted to serve others, I had to do good yoga because I felt that they needed my good wishes and pure feelings. And I couldn't get up, so I used to get up 2 o'clock in the morning to meditate for someone who I felt needed that extra help. But I couldn't do it for myself, for my own effort, you know, but I could do it for someone else. So we can start with what's easy for us, and then we develop the other aspects. Because we are all inclined towards one or another. So you just take the easy route and the others will develop. And I remember Daddy Janki, who was the, you know, a great teacher for all of us for 40, 50 years nearly. She was such a great teacher. She talked about these four subjects. And I'll play a little game with you like she played with us. What's the most important quality we need for knowledge? What do we need to really be able to take knowledge, to take with memory? Compassion? Clear mind? Huh? Understanding? Emptiness? Okay, do you want to hear Daddy's? Purity. Purity. Who would have thought? There's a saying in India that the milk of the lioness can only be kept in a golden vessel. Think about it. The milk of a lioness can only be kept in a golden vessel. So we need to make this vessel pure, so that the knowledge can sit. And I don't know about you, but when I first started to listen to this knowledge, especially when I attended some morning classes, I used to enjoy the class. And at the end, they'd say, "What did you like?" Couldn't remember a single thing. And we talk about it as being like a hot grid, you know, just shh, shh, shh. So when our mind is pure, and this is what also all meditations focus on, pure mind. You know, before Raja Yoga, I studied and practiced Buddhism for a few years and even came to India to look for an ashram to become a nun in my late teens. So, you know, this pure mind for any wisdom tradition, right? It's so important. So it makes sense, purity for knowledge. Okay, so they're not easy, are they? You didn't get that one. Let's see the next one. What's the most important quality for yoga? Silence. Witness. Fitness. Oh, yeah, not physical yoga, that's fitness, but yoga. Okay, let me talk a bit about that because there's two aspects that we practice. One is meditation, and that's cultivating the soul. It's a lot of work. You know, we do a lot of cleaning up and work. But then there's yoga. Yoga means the link, union. The word means union. So yoga means that direct connection, which we could say, I'll give you a hint, it means relationship. So what do you need for that? Which one quality will help? Love, yes. willingness, connection, clear mind, faith, purity. It's a not the same one, it's a different one. Okay, think about relationship. What is the most important quality? Love, yes, but what about... Okay, let's talk about parents and children. Your children can do just about anything and you can get, you know, get by. But if they lie to you, what do you feel? You feel, oh, my relationship's almost broken, right? So honesty. Yeah, honesty. We need that honesty in that relationship. And this is what we love about God. What I took a lot from when I was doing the course, there was a meditation, a guided meditation. It said, God is the one that doesn't see my weaknesses, but gives me the strength to overcome all weaknesses. You know? So if I'm going to have that relationship, the more I'm honest, the better working relationship we are going to have. Because this, we're going to do this together. I'm not going to do this alone. I can't transform myself alone. That's what I tried to do. And that's why I found I needed a connection, and I couldn't... I used to say, oh, God's for weak people. It's just a crutch. I don't need God. I can do this. But I didn't change after 2 years. And then I came across Rajoga and I got this connection. I found I could just give up habits like that and change so much more easily because of love. So definitely love is a part of this. But the honesty is what's going to keep the relationship good. Okay, third one, inculcation. What will help us to inculcate virtues? Inculcate, to imbibe virtues, to bring virtues into our life, to transform. Because it's one thing to have the knowledge, to have a connection, but it should translate into a more virtuous life. That's dharana. That's inculcation. Practice. Okay, what about humility? Humility. That's a very good one too, because if we don't even see, if we're not humble enough to see what's needed, we're never going to change because we don't even see the need. And I've only ever had one person. This person came, a couple came, a wife brought her husband, and I was talking about peace, and he said, oh, I'm already peaceful. And she's going, Charles, because he wasn't peaceful at all. But you can't change if you're not humble, right? It's not possible. So humility. Yeah. And service. Service, I think you can guess that one. It's a bit easier. What quality do we need for service? Compassion. Mercy. Daddy's word was mercy. But really to feel, empathy, compassion, mercy. To really feel, you know, for humanity, for what's going on. And so, keeping the heart open and the mind clear so that we can feel, you know. And it's amazing how we can say the right thing to a person. I'm sure you've had that experience. You just say exactly what the person needed, and you didn't know, you know, not, you didn't know, but somehow it just comes. So, you know, another very big thing about this practice is always seeing myself as an instrument. And that, of course, helps in everything, because as long as I think I am doing it, I is one of the heaviest words. Just I, if we just said I. You know, interestingly, the Australian Aboriginal people do not have a word I. They have we who belong to one mother, we who belong to this, we who, they're all we. And the only time they say I is when they need to fight. And when they feel a need to fight, they'll go out and walk in the community, and the word is ngai in that language I heard, because there's so many languages, and they say ngai, ngai, means ngai, it means I, and it means I need to fight. And somebody who also needs to fight will come and fight them. And then it's done. How curious. I just think that's so fascinating. But it makes sense, doesn't it? Doesn't it make sense? Yeah. That when you really have this thing, I, it's like you really need to fight. But they don't fight in an aggressive way. They fight, you know, just to get it out of their system. So imagine being brought up in a culture where there's no word for I, just we. And so here we're going to experience all of these things, because we're very much a we here, aren't we? All the we of all the different cultures, nationalities, and we know that each one is on their own unique journey, and yet we are individuals, and yet we're so collective. And so it's just wonderful that we are here in this place together. I just want to mention a few more things for you to take maximum benefit. One is just be a bit careful of all the physical things. You know, so, you know, I'm a good example. Well, maybe a bad example, because I came a week earlier than you and I was walking in the rain. I don't really mind a bit of rain, but I got a bit of a cold. So just take care. We have raincoats, we have, you know, whatever you need, but take care and don't be, you know, sometimes we're just excited, we want to do this and do that, and, you know, but just take care. And also, if you saw the wonderful variety of food, don't mix it all too much. You know, be a bit discerning so that you have the right combination, you know. Just think, when you're taking your food, everything in fact, be mindful. When you're taking the food, just be really mindful. What does my body feel to have from this? Because sometimes you have this and then you have this and they don't really go together. And also there's so much. Didn't you notice? And they put very good, healthy servings. So just, take care, because those kinds of things can also put your body out of balance, and make sure that, you know, you've got good walking shoes, because this afternoon we're going walking. But if we all just look after ourselves in a very sensible way, then it'll be a very good week. So any questions about this week we're going to share together and how you might benefit most? How did I move from doing to being? I think because I lived in Asia for so long, I think that helped me a lot. I'm still quite a doing person. Have you noticed? but I think there's a very wonderful saying that was, again, a big paradigm shift for me from Taoism, from the Tao Te Ching, a Chinese philosophy. And it said, few leaders realize how little they have to do. Few leaders realize how little they have to do. And that really changed my world. And since then, nearly well, maybe everything I think happens. It happens. I used to say nearly everything, but I wanted to see this Australian animal in the wild called a wombat, and I couldn't see the animal in the wild. So I thought, nearly everything I think happens. But now I live with so many wombats in the wild, so now I say everything I think happens. But it means, you know, our thoughts are so effective if we can slow them down. And when we savor, you know, the qualities that we're learning to emerge. Because I remember being in Philippines and a couple of nuns came to stay with me for the day. And they said, we just want to spend the day with you. We don't need to talk to you. We don't need to do anything. We just want to be with you. And so they just came and beed with me for the day. It was so beautiful. And I felt it was so honest, you know, because I could say nice things and, you know, you can sometimes try and sell yourself through words, but you can't sell yourself through your presence. It's either there or it's not. And I just really appreciated it. So there is a very much a practice of being in most Asian traditions. So I hope I've picked up a bit of that. But yeah, but I think what I was trying to share was mainly the practical aspects, because, you know, hearing words like peace or even love, or all these qualities we talked about. What were the four? Knowledge, which was? Purity. No, purity. Knowledge was purity. Yoga was? Honesty. And inculcation? Humility. And mercy. So, you know, just savoring these qualities and enjoying yourself is being. Otherwise, we're always needing other entertainment and things from outside. But it's a matter of, you know, really making all these words real, because we can talk about peace. I talked about peace for 20 years, and when I was, or 10, 15 years, and someone said, what is peace? I didn't even have a clear definition, you know, so I need to study. That's what this is, a university. This is the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University. And it's a spiritual university. So what do we study in a spiritual university? Ourselves, because we are spirit. So we study. And what is spirit? A being of peace, love, purity, happiness, power, bliss. So we study these things to really know what they mean, so we can experience them and become masters. We need to become masters of peace, of happiness, of love. So this is how we transfer the knowing into being. Good, so should we finish with just a few minutes meditation? Yeah? Okay, so we can just finish with a few minutes of reflection on some of these things. Closest word to meditation is awareness. So just being aware. Of the atmosphere of this room. Thank you. and of the souls who have gathered here together on this journey. Where we can create for this week our own little world. You describe an open mind. It would be a vast mind. Broad-minded, far-sighted, uncluttered. And what do I need to have such an open mind? and very deep sense of trust in myself. Most importantly, Om Shanti, that inner state of peace, a clear mind. Shine.